The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
This is episode 86. We're the new game in town? No.
The new audio game.
The new audio game.
Audio game. That's right. We're not being 86th either. Or the old one is being 86th, yeah. Right?
So. For traveling shows only at Mary's house.
That's right.
Right. So what we did is I got a new mixer and new mics and new cables and... So,
hoping to put a little more consistency into our audio sound.
That's right.
Hopefully.
I still have phantom mic syndrome because I keep reaching for the mic out here, but there's no mic because, you know, the mic is attached to us.
That's funny.
So, anyway, well,
all right.
So, we should probably...
What we did this week?
Yeah, what kind of Linux-y open source stuff did you do, Matt?
What kind of Linux-y open source stuff?
Well, or something else, if it's really highly humorous.
I was just pounding that book, trying to get through that book
the BSD
for next
book.
Week's show.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get all the way through it for next week's show, but I'll have a decent review of what I've done so far.
Oh, great.
And started nights. Last night was the first night on the permanent nighttime shift.
And we can tell. Yeah. You're looking
so
a little
I've
tired.
I worked from 7 p.m. last night to 7 a.m. this morning, and then came mm-hmm. here. So mm-hmm. I may be a bit grouchy, and there may be more expletives than normal.
Uh-oh. I better get my notes ready.
Not good. All right. Well, we'll... Tony will be recording the times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty good. I mean, well, I guess as far as temporary, right?
No, it's permanent. That's the way it is.
But not weekends it's going to be.
No, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Every Saturday night, he posted it backwards. He had the two schedules backwards.
But I thought you said that it wouldn't be permanent working on the weekends unless,
yes.
You know. Okay.
Well. Because I thought it wasn't going to be permanent because the original schedule he posted, he had Zach and I doing... The uh-huh. every
yeah, okay.
Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, every other Tuesday, but Zach and I aren't doing that shift. We're really doing the every Saturday, Sunday, Monday, every other Tuesday.
All right, that sounds kind of brutal.
Yeah, it's tough.
So. Okay, well, good luck with it.
Yeah.
All right, Tony. What's going on?
What's
with you?
Going on? Well, new equipment. I'm excited.
You spent all week working on or playing around with the new
getting it together, testing.
I could say playing around with the new equipment, but
playing around with his new equipment. What?
I didn't say that. Well, you sure are sharp enough to catch that, weren't you? but anyway, the new mixer.
Yeah, the new mixer. It's a Behringer Zenix Z E N Y X 12102. And FX, so we
a lot of dials and
yeah, 12
and
inputs
stuff.
And a built-in equalizer, and it has the FX, so I can add in reverb or
do you still need
delay.
To use the amp though, or no?
No, yeah, this has it's all built in preamp and everything built into
all
it.
Right.
So, and it has mic preamps. So if we go with the XLR mics, that'll work with those also.
Right.
Yeah, and then we got Audio Technica Lav mics. Lavalier microphones, and its model is ATR3350. We were looking at some $10 mics, but there were some bad reviews on those, so
were
I
there?
Decided, yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't tell the difference, so to me it looked like the only difference was these had an on-off switch and those did not.
Yeah, well, Audio Technica is a better brand quality. The other had, I don't know, was some Japanese or... Chinese or something that Poly Pro or something like that.
I think you get what you pay for, and
right.
I always try to shy away from getting the cheapest because 9 times out of 10 you're going to end up with something that's less than what you're looking for, and the little extra money you spend. What's like those regular size mics we had? I went and got a slightly more expensive one, the $34 one instead of the $29 one, and. Maybe it was just the glossy chrome on it or something that made it better or something. I don't know. But anyway.
Possibly, yeah.
All right. that's pretty good. As for what I did, well, I did a lot of stuff because I seemed like I was really busy. But, you know, I've been talking about recall each week. You know, last week I was able to tell Chatter that that it does search SQL databases. Well, I had to find, I had an abortive shutdown, or I had to abort my system, or something happened. And a document ended up getting, closing down, obviously, and I couldn't find it. So I fired up recall, and actually it was for our distro stuff, and I just put in SMS, and it was sitting in a temp file in my home directory,
right.
But I was searching, my search was a little more granular, but the beauty of it, and the only reason I'm saying this, is that recall found it. Boom. I am liking recall.
But if you just open Office or LibreOffice,
it didn't, yeah.
Normally it'll say, hey, a document needs to be recovered. It didn't do that?
It didn't do that, but I was using two desktops, and so I'm thinking that it might have been on the other desktop, and I didn't realize it at the time. But when it searched for it, it found it in the temp directory, and in my home directory. So that was kind of cool. And again, recall, I'm loving it. So, and
cool.
Yeah, I'm working on the website for my community association. We're going to go live June 7th, so that's coming down the home stretch. Doing a lot of work there.
Yeah, you're doing something. Aren't you doing something with the website for that candidate you're backing too? Or
yep, I did a little bit of reorganizing of that. But we're meeting this week to start to crank out some walking lists for people to canvas. So, about it. And I'm working on my review write up for PCBSD for next week. So that'll be fun. And
yes, sir.
About it.
Ma'am.
Yes, sir, ma'am. All right.
All right.
Okay.
Highlander says he has the same mixer that we have now.
Oh.
I put in there because Dowd was asking. And I put in Behringer, but I think I spelled Behringer wrong. But either way, it's the Zenix 1202 FX.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
There's not much of it this week because they're all at LinuxCon Japan. So on Sunday, May 26, 2013, at 17:03 Pacific Daylight Time, Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.10-RC3, and this is what he had to say about it. Another week, another RC, a big one. I'm not thrilled about it, and RC3 is much bigger than RC2 was, though there isn't anything particularly scary that stands out, just a lot of small details. A number of people apparently missed RC2 and then made RC3. Oh well. I can pretty much guarantee that RC4 is going to be smaller because A, I'm going to be grumpy if people try to push as much to RC4 as happened to RC3, and B, I'm going to be traveling for most of next week and part of the week after. What he's talking about there is this, because last Sunday was when this was released. He's talking about being in Japan this
gotcha.
Week.
So, yeah.
I'll have the internet, but I really, really hope and expect that things should be calmer coming up, right? Right, guys? Anyway, it's mostly fairly small changes and mostly to drivers, networks, staging, USB, video, DRM. There's some architectural updates too. ARM, MIPS, and PowerPC, and random stuff all over. Go at it, Linus Torvalds. So the main line is 3.10-RC3. There was only one stable update this week from Ben Hutchings, who on Friday, the 31st of May, 2013, at 14:06 Greenwich Mean Time, released kernel 3.2.46, with 104 files changed, 905 lines inserted, and 425 lines deleted. And this week's kernel developer quote comes from the man himself. Linux conferences is when we get together and discuss important issues face-to-face. Issues like, how did John ever graduate from kindergarten? And gender issues in the kernel community. Do girls have cooties? Very mature, John. Very mature. What he's discussing there is a photo of himself that is taken with another gentleman while John Corbett from LWN mm-hmm. is bunny earing him. And I'll have a link to the actual picture in the show notes.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's all I have for the Colonel News.
All right.
Sounds like a good time in Japan.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
So what do we have this week, Tony?
I'm trying to remember. Did we leave off with Proxmox at the end of last week?
Yes, we talked did. About
or
it.
Or SuperX.
Yeah.
We're starting we talked with about SMS.
That. We're starting with we're SMS. Starting.
All right.
So, superb. Oh, go ahead.
There's a lot of development. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. Yeah. So SMS is a superb mini server. 2.04.
2.0.4.
Oh, you're right. I left the dot out. That was released on the 28th. It's a Slackware-based distribution with or four servers with Webmin as the base. I didn't know Webmin came with a built-in or installed.
Yeah, what they do is the Superb Mini Server does not have an X Windows Server by default, and just to keep it light and small. Mm-hmm. And so what they've done is they've put Webmin in there so that you can administer it via Webmin. However, there is a light X window with a KDE add-on for users that want it. But what you have to do is you got to go to the download section, and it's a separate download. I think it's 99.
Who installs X on a freaking server?
Somebody does.
Windows
morons.
People.
Morons.
Well, maybe Windows people, but anyway, you've got to go there and install it. And as I said, it's 99 megabytes. 99 megabytes of KDE goodness, I guess. And by the way, too, this project, they offer customization services, and they're really pretty reasonably priced. You can get a custom version of SMS for, I think, 40 euros, which is really not that expensive. You just give them what you want. And
What do they use for packages, DEBs or RPMs? Or?
Well, that I don't know, but you can also get SMS based on a different distro than Slackware.
And oh, that right. Oh Slackware.
Yeah, it's Slackware. Okay. Yeah, I was confused by that because I thought you heard the part first.
No.
Part.
Yeah. Well, the reason I was talking about Webmin, and it says it's built in, is I've used it a lot, and I really like it. I think it's pretty good.
I like Webmin. What I really like about Webmin is the fact that the only thing it does is actually edit the real config files, and in a human-readable way.
Yeah.
So that you can then go in and also edit the config files or use Webmin, and your results are going to be the same. And the changes work across the platform correctly. Like Webmin will see the changes that you hand edited. When I use Webmin, there are some things that I like to use Webmin for, like cron jobs. Webmin makes setting up cron jobs super, super easy. But I prefer to do DHCP by actually editing the DHCP.com. So it just gives you both worlds right there, and I really like Webmin a lot.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Go ahead.
Like I said, I've been using it for a while, and I think the only downfall of Webmin is it looks kind of ugly.
Which theme are you using?
Yeah.
Any of them. I've tried like five different themes.
I just use the basic blue theme, and I think it looks fine.
Yeah.
Well, it looks fine.
When you say ugly,
and it's
what are
powerful.
You talking about?
It's just not as pretty as
color scheme.
Pretty.
It's some of the other.
Eye candy on a server.
No, not
configuration.
Not a color scheme.
All right, there's the
guy. That's the guy that puts X on a freaking server.
I do not.
Tony, we're just teasing. Well, at least I am. I don't know about Matt.
Yeah. A little bit.
Anyway.
Webmin, I've used it, though. I'm not actively maintaining a server at home right now, but when I was, I used Webmin, and I heard about it from you, Matt. And I found it to be really a nice way to handle it. And I always remembered your little caveat about if you're not careful about what you do in it, you can really screw things up.
Yes.
So I was always very careful.
Oh, yeah.
You got to pay attention.
Yep. Yeah.
Because it will not keep you from destroying your server.
Yeah. All right.
So the next one we have on the 29th, we have Mint 15. Linux Mint 15 has been released. Clement Lefebvre.
Lefebvre. He said Lefebvre.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, it's Olivia.
Lefebvre.
Oh, sorry, guys. I don't know. There's this thing with names. And I think that's why
you give Tony anything but like a English John or an Smith. Irish or a German name, and he's lost.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway, it's codename Olivia has been released this week, and it has the latest updates for Mate 1.6 and Cinnamon 1.8, and the login screen, MDM, can themed with HTML5.
Yeah,
that looks very cool.
I was almost thinking about installing it just to see what they've got going there with that startup sequence, because they've got a lot of looks like a lot of improvements and functionality. But one thing that cracked me up when I was checking what they've got new in this release is that they said here, that it offers a ton of new features, including a screensaver and a unified control center. And I thought, oh, kind of like a control panel or system setting. Just the way they worded it kind of cracked me up. It's like the screensaver was like a new feature. But no, seriously, they've from the looks of their announcement, which obviously has got a little marketing twist to it, it looks like they've got some interesting things going on as far as the initial start sequence.
Yeah, it's very cool. Okay. I haven't upgraded yet. I was looking at it, and they don't suggest a straight upgrade. They suggest to back up your stuff, wipe, and reinstall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that was significant enough changes. Yeah.
Well, Fedora has always recommended that up until the most recent 17 to 18 when they came up with that FedUp script. So
yeah.
A lot of distributions recommend that, actually.
Yeah, Mint has a backup utility that's called the Mint Backup. And
what is it a front end for?
Which is really just Bacula in the.
Is that.
Well, I don't know.
What it does, well, it probably is.
It grabs a list of all your applications you have installed, and it'll save that list off to the side, and then it'll back up all of your data, and then you reinstall everything, and then you go back with that Mint, you say restore this, and it'll go through and reinstall all your applications, it'll go through and restore all of your. Settings and configs, and yeah.
Can you set it to, like, go back in a certain time? Just kidding.
Because normally your configs are all in your home directory anyway for your personal stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And I found that when doing that, as long as you just use the same home directory over again, your configs all worked anyway.
And that's my plan. The only issue I've had doing that is when you go from one version of the display manager to the next. So, like with GNOME, when I went from, different versions with Ubuntu, it would screw settings up and stuff. So I'd actually take my home folder and make it like a .old, and then install and create a new folder, new home folder, and just copy all my data and everything but like the window manager, temp files or whatever, hidden files.
I just always left it all right in place, and I never had
running Cinnamon, Mint on my laptop.
Okay, you are running Mint.
And Cinnamon has problems with using.
I don't know. I haven't done it with Cinnamon, and it may not.
Because I've done it with KDE and LXDE, and never had any problems.
Right. Well, it was GNOME 2 is when I had those problems.
GNOME. That's why.
Is that desktop getting a little stale?
You're using GNOME.
I was using it 5 years ago, and that's when I had those problems.
Oh, okay.
That's because it's GNOME.
Hey, speaking of, I realize we've hijacked your distro thing here, Tony, but Matt, last week, or 2 weeks ago, you said you kind of made this little, tiny, quiet statement.
I'm fine on Fedora. I get a little antsy once in a while, but I'm fine on Fedora.
You are? Yeah. Okay. All right. I just was kind of curious about that. I just saw a whole opportunity for a new segment for our show. But okay. All right, so go ahead, Tony.
All right. And then the next one we have on the 30th is Chakra, GNU Linux 2013.05. And Yeah.
And actually, I am going to be going into some detail about that, kind of a drive-by review. Not a review exactly. They've got some new things going on there, as you probably were just about ready to say before I cut you off. And so I'm going to be talking about that.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say. I was going to let you talk about it.
Oh, okay.
Since you're going to...
Yeah, yesterday I spent half of the day going through it and checking this stuff out. So we'll I'll be covering that in a few moments.
Very cool. And the last one this week is the Vinix 4.0, which is a Ubuntu-based distribution for visually impaired users, offering text-to-speech and Braille support right from the boot up.
That's right, and then you...
Wonder if Sonar knows about VLex.
That's a good question. I was thinking they seem similar, but I think Sonar goes a little bit further for other disabilities.
Yeah, Sonar is any disability.
Right.
Okay. This one is more for visually impaired, but it's based out of the UK.
Sonar was the first distribution ever to wait for a certain period, and then if you did during the install, and then if there was no keyboard response to the on-screen questions, it fires up
Orca?
eSpeak.
Oh.
Well, yeah, because you're in the install. I don't think Orca is going to work at the install
level.
Oh,
okay.
But it fires up eSpeak and reads the screen to you via eSpeak. It was the first distribution that did that, just on a timeout, without having to hit any key at all.
Huh.
All right, very cool.
Well, yep. And actually, this one uses GNOME. And it's sort of funny because utility. Actually, it's a daemon called. I initially thought it was Britty, BRITTY, but it's BRL for Braille, TTY. So I thought it was Britty. So I'm thinking, it's from the UK. So
maybe it's
going to put a British accent on Orca. But then
it's
I discovered
it's
exactly
Braille, TTY.
Yeah, I know. I discovered that. So I was pretty embarrassed, and I debated even mentioning it.
I was going to say you didn't even have to tell anybody, Mary. Come on.
I know, but I just thought somebody could get a laugh at my expense.
I did.
All right.
All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right, so number 5, we have Magia with 1472.
And trending down.
Ooh.
And number 4, we have Ubuntu with 1594.
And trending down.
Number 3, we have Fedora with 1827.
And trending up.
And number 2, we have Debian with 1919.
And trending down.
And in the number 1 spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With a whopping 5,072.
And trending up.
Wow.
That's huge.
I think that's the first one that has broken the 5,000.
I think around their release last time, 14, it was close to that, or it was like
Mint's,
52.
Mint's really popular. I still say Magia is only hanging in the top 5 there by freaking robots.
I think it's a little more popular than we see because we don't know anybody using it.
Although we did start mirroring it, and our mirror guy said that it was getting hit hard.
Yeah.
By robots.
I said it was by robots.
I'm kidding. I mean, it's a fine distribution.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Okay.
So, Mary,
yes.
It's your drive-by this week, huh?
It is.
You know, it's funny that the only person here that attempts to do a drive-by is the one that lives in Detroit.
the one who lives in Detroit is always doing those drive-bys.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead,
Mary. I do have one, and as you just heard, of course, it's Chakra Linux. And I did that because when I saw that it was released, and as I've said before, Chakra is my favorite distro that I don't have installed, although I'm going to be moving that over and putting another one up there, PCBSD, and we'll talk about that next week.
Ooh.
So stay tuned, everyone. But when I saw that Chakra had made some changes some major changes to their system, I decided to take a look at it. So, and the kernel, by the way, that they have moved to is 3.7.6, and of course the review desktop is KDE, because that is a KDE-centric distro. Now, I went ahead and not just ran it from the DVD. I went ahead and installed it. And as I've said before, it sports arguably the most attractive install process I've seen. Keep in mind, I've done over 50 different distro installs in the past year. Well, better make that 20, since probably 30 were Ubuntu installs, and probably could be considered as one. Just like they do for Linux Mint on DistroWatch.
Oh, here we go.
my slap. only for that. Mint is it's a nice distro. I don't run it, but it's a nice distro. In addition to offering the standard options and questions you see during a Linux distro install, Chakra also provides you with a few other choices. You can opt to create a root password separately or select the option to use the regular user's password as root, which is kind of sudo without using sudo. Or maybe it's going on behind the scenes. But
No, you're just... What it's doing is it's just using both.
Yeah.
The same password for both usernames.
Okay. But you're given that option. You also have the option of customizing the initial RAM disk, which lets you activate support for booting from a variety of devices, USB, NFS shares, LVM volumes, FireWire, etc. So those things are presented to you. And finally, and near to my heart, is the bootloader settings are easily accessible and simple to interpret. You either want to install Grub 2 or you don't to the master boot record. So I chose not to install it and run update Grub from my root distro, which is Kubuntu. So I went through that whole process, again, very smooth, and I rebooted. Now, as I reported, I think, last year, and actually it's been about a year, Chakra walks you through Kaputin, a setup wizard, for lack of a better term, which assists you in finalizing settings during your initial login. Functions like mouse button, type of launcher, folders in your home directory, etc., all handled by this wizard. The more choices... boy, that was an oddly written sentence.
Hey, I run into those fairly frequently in my writings.
That's because I was doing like five things yesterday, and then I go through and thinking, why did I say that?
It's because I type so slowly, and my thoughts get way ahead of what I'm actually typing.
Oh, you leave off words?
All the time.
But anyway, you've got a choice during this process of five different launchers, and actually it's gone up one from last year because you've got the standard KDE 4 kickoff menu. You also have the simple menu, which is a KDE 3 style menu. You've got Lancelot, which is a launcher style menu, and it's similar to the KDE 4 one. You also have Home Run, which is the full screen menu. And then you've got something called App Menu QML, which is it supports multiple columns so that they just kind of shift over so you can have three columns there. Now, I chose that one because that was not with last year's distro or version of Chakra. And oddly enough, it started as a tiny window that I had to manually enlarge by dragging the border. But once I did that, that setting was remembered, and it was fine. The two things I was particularly interested in for this particular review were A, the replacement of Chakra's bundles, and B, the new graphical interface for software updates and installs. With this release, Chakra replaced its bundle system. And again, for those who aren't familiar with it, there's a single bundle that contained all the files required to run an application. You just simply had to drop that. It was simply dropped into into the file system, and it was run from there, with a separate repository that holds files for GTK packages. However, it does not come activated by default. To use it, you've got to edit pacman.conf, uncommenting the extras repositories where the GTK apps, and again, this is for GIMP, Inkscape, Firefox, are maintained, and I'll cover that in a few minutes. This release of Chakra also supports the new graphical front end for Pac-Man. It's called Octopi, spelled with the obligatory K. Incidentally, it's spelled with a C in kdeapps.org because it was officially released, and I've got the link to the kdeapps.org version of it. But again, they've got a C. Chakra uses a K. Now, Chakra's history with graphical installers takes takes more twists than a pretzel. When KDE split from Arch, a graphical package manager was used, but abandoned because it could not handle complex updates well. The CLI updater was used in its place while the developers worked on a replacement. And when I reviewed it, I think I used that. And, you know, again, it's like apt-get install at the command line, except you're using different commands. And it worked well, but anyone who is a little reluctant to use the command line, they might shy away from it. Let's see here. So the CLI updater was used in place. Worked on a replacement. Now, that project appears to be still underway, but Octopi certainly is serviceable for anyone wanting the comfort of a graphical package manager. Okay, back to the process. So, as I said, you follow that change by, adding that repository, but then updating the repositories in Octopi, and you are ready to install. Now, I installed GIMP to test the process. After I found and selected GIMP in Octopi, I right-clicked my selection to select Install, and the process began. It identified dependencies, which I acknowledged, and opened a terminal window. and asked me if I wanted to proceed. Yes was my answer, and the install commenced. After it was over, the terminal instructed me to press any key to close the shell. So what happens is that this terminal now, you know, if you run Synaptic or any other graphical or some graphical installers, you'll see a terminal window, but it's kind of encased in as part of that install window. But this kind of opened a separate one, which was a little...
Like an external window?
Exactly. It was a completely separate window, which is fine. It just kind of caught me by surprise. And it kind of left me with the idea that there's, it just uses that Octopi just for some basic stuff, and it's really running it through the shell terminal. And that's fine, but it kind of caught me by surprise. But as part of the install, another directory was added to the root file system called Extra. Within this directory, a file system is set up to hold the installed files. So essentially, all packages in the Extra repository are installed inside this Extra directory. So if you take a look at the root file system, and I'll have screenshots of before and after, this Extra directory was added. And what Chakra does is it runs all of those applications from inside there. So it creates another file system. You've got Extra Etsy, Extra Bin, Extra Lib, Extra User, and Extra App.
Oh, so you've got a whole new root file system.
Yes,
in there.
Inside the Extra. So that's how they're handling it. And the reason why they did this is because creating those bundles, it was a lot of work for developers. It just a lot of extra work to maintain that. And Matt, I think you observed when I talked about it initially, is that there's some duplicity there.
Right,
not duplicity,
yeah.
But well, duplication.
Yeah, because the same libraries you're going to have to install over and over and over.
Right.
Yeah, and if you're running more than one GTK app, let's say you got GIMP open and you got Firefox open, your RAM is being kind of hogged by the same library twice for
right.
the different
oh,
apps.
Yeah.
So anyway, they thought this was a more elegant approach, and I do think that it is because it's very clean. It's just in that extra directory, and you can go in there and take a look. And again, it doesn't muddy up the pristine KDE
correct. And
landscape.
Correct, because it's in its own like cheruted.
Mm-hmm.
Area, and if you wanted to just get rid of the GTK stuff after a while too, you could just bam wipe that directory out, and it's all gone.
Yeah. One thing I noted when I installed it is that I am accustomed to then being able to go to the menu or the launcher and seeing the an icon for that particular program there, but it wasn't there when I installed via this extra repository. So I created one for GIMP. Then when I rebooted, what happens is that it goes in and finds them and adds them. So apparently, at least it was my experience, and again, your experience may differ, it wasn't available until after you reboot, because I also installed Inkscape just to check this out.
Now, did you have to reboot, or could you have just logged out and logged back in?
I probably could have logged out and logged back in, because when you think about it, it's reading your files, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so that probably... I only rebooted because, for some other reason... Not to specifically do that, because I had already manually added the icon in the launcher, but it's when I went back in, I suddenly had two of them. And then I also had, I also had the Inkscape, because as I said, I installed Inkscape too. So, but again, it's a very, it's an improvement in my opinion. Okay, a couple other interesting programs I just want to just briefly touch on. There was something called Mini Backup, which backs up your most important KDE config files. Have you heard of that, Matt, at all?
No.
I was not familiar with it. But if you don't use the KDE PIM suite, this tool will probably have little value for it, because it's contacts, all that kind of stuff. If you don't use Kmail.
No, I don't use the PIM suite, and I turned off Akandi.
Yeah. And then it also has the SUSE Studio Image Writer in there, so that you can go ahead and take an ISO and write it if you want to. So that's my little extra info on Chakra, this most recent release of Chakra. So
cool.
You know, again,
some major changes.
Yeah, major changes, and I do like their approach with those bundles.
Yeah.
And they said it's going to grow.
I think they made some pretty major changes, but it sounds like they were for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially the way they do the GTK apps now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, if their goal, and it is to create or to maintain a pristine KDE environment, they've done that, but they've allowed the GTK, because there's some... GIMP's a great app. I like Firefox. Inkscape, I always... My dream is to be able
Pinta.
To use Inkscape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Pinta.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, from the Resistance is Futile category, For longer than most of us want to remember, Bob Muglia made statements declaring why Microsoft's server was so good. Well, Muglia doesn't work for Microsoft anymore. He now works for Juniper, going on 2 years now. He also doesn't manage a software stack based on Windows either. Juniper, like practically all other networking vendors out there, uses Linux. So now Muglia manages a software stack with Linux at its core. And here's what he said recently about Linux. It was a no-brainer for me coming into Juniper because Linux is the operating system that has broadened in use. Most systems these days outside of the Apple and Microsoft ecosystems are all Linux-based. So, So now that he's not being paid by the evil empire, he has changed his tune.
Although, you know what I'd like to say to him is they need to have a client for Linux. The everything I do for, like, the web client that we have for my work is Juniper. It does not work on my Linux computers.
All of our Juniper stuff is Linux. We have a Juniper maintenance server that manages all of our Juniper servers. Like, you just make the change on the maintenance server, and then it changes all the switches. That's all Linux-based.
I'm talking about remoting in, remotely connecting to my, from home to work.
Yeah, I have my VPN. VPN?
Oh, I don't know. We use something else for our VPN. I don't know what we use for our VPN.
But we use Juniper.
But it's just, I just use PPD and do it right in Linux.
All right. Mm-hmm. Cool. So.
Well, some of us don't have that luxury. We're stuck in the Windows world.
Yeah.
You poor bastards.
Although we use Cisco at work.
Yeah.
And
but a Juniper VPN gateway?
Yeah.
That's so retarded.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, next up, and this one's for you, Keith. We have the Australian government standardizes on ODF. Back in 2011, the Australian Government Information Management Office, AGIMO, decided to standardize on Microsoft Office's OpenXML. However, the massive outcry from the public forced them to reconsider, which they have now done. The Australian Government CTO announced on their blog that government agencies should, at a minimum, support Open Document 1.1. This does not preclude the use of other formats nor mandate the use of ODF 1.1. ODF 1.1 was chosen as the baseline because it is based on common and open standards. And last but not least, when Mark Shuttleworth does something right, he does it right.
And you take note of it.
And I do, even though I disagree with a lot of his practices. Mark Shuttleworth closes bug number one. Mark Shuttleworth closed bug number one, which simply stated this. Microsoft has a majority market share. That was the entire bug.
That's your entire story?
I lost my place when I looked up from the page.
All right.
Well, on Thursday, May 30th, he closed this bug after being open for almost 9 years. This is what he said about it. Personal computing today is a broader proposition than it was in 2004. Phones, tablets, wearables, and other devices are all part of the mix for our digital lives. From a competitive perspective, the broader market has healthy competition, with iOS and Android representing a meaningful share. Android may not be my or your first choice of Linux, but it is, without doubt, an open-source platform that offers both practical and economic benefits to the users and industry. So we have both competition and good representation for open-source in personal computing. Even though we have only played a small part in that shift, I think it's important for us to recognize that the shift has taken place. So from Ubuntu's perspective, this bug is now closed.
Hmm. All right. That's very cool.
Yep.
Yeah, it is a very different landscape than 8 years ago.
Yep.
And Windows 8.1 will probably...
I don't know.
Not.
But 8 years ago, you could not walk in anywhere and buy anything with Linux on it. Today, you walk in anywhere, Best Buy, and you can buy tablets with Android.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, now, you just...
You buy hardware you with Linux on it. That's what you meant.
You still can't walk in and buy anything with Linux on it.
What?
You're buying Android.
Android is Linux.
Kinda.
No, it's Linux. It's the kernel.
It is.
I know it is. It is. It is. I just cracked up on you. You made this broad statement 8 years ago. You couldn't buy anything with Linux on it. Now you can go in and buy Android. It just sounded kind of funny. That's all. It just struck me as a humorous.
Only to your uneducated ear.
Okay, we'll let that
go. Yeah, that's enough. All right.
Okay.
So, what do you guys own anything, Mary?
Oh, yeah. You just trash me, and then you're looking for me to pick up the slack after you. Pick up the slackware after you.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I do. I've got a couple items, and I'll drop these links in the show notes. The first one was Raspberry Pi puts holes in China's great firewall. And what I really liked about this one, and this was from the UK's, the LREG, the Register, the IT news site.
Yeah, yeah.
This article talks about how they set up, and again, one of the key things about, oops, is it okay?
I think so.
All right. Tony dropped his...
I thought I broke the screen.
His mini tablet.
All right.
Used to be a phone, but now it's a mini tablet.
Right. Well, it's my Wi-Fi phone. That's
what I
call
it. Oh, your Wi-Fi phone, yeah.
Yeah, because I can make calls and everything from it.
Using what? Who are you using?
Takatone. It uses Google Voice.
Wi-Fi. It uses Google Voice and the Wi-Fi connection.
But whose phone number are you using?
It's my Google Voice phone number. Which is tied to your cell phone number.
Well, it's a separate phone number that through
when
Google
I'm,
Voice.
When I'm at home at my desk and my cell phone is next to me, my laptop actually rings for about three or four rings before my cell phone rings.
Okay.
I know we talked about that. I have it go the other way around. When when I don't answer my cell phone, it rings this phone.
Okay.
So at work, when I have no cell service,
I have
Wi-Fi.
Have cell service?
Yeah, it rings on here.
Pretty sneaky. All right. Well, speaking of sneaky stuff, then I'm going to get back to this story
because
you know one of the nice things about the Raspberry Pi is the nice thing about it is that it is extremely portable, and that's why I found this story to be quite interesting. Mr. Camera over there.
What the heck?
I don't know.
What kind of sound effect was that?
I don't know, but he didn't take any pictures when you were reading. So what he's done with his Raspberry Pi is that the Raspberry Pi is set up to connect via VPN out, and then it becomes a Wi-Fi hotspot. So anybody in the area can then connect to the Raspberry Pi and then go out via VPN to view the internet in an uncensored way. So
very cool.
I know. I thought that was very. I thought that was very nice. And again, they use.
Why does it have to be Raspberry Pi, or is it just because it's
small.
Compact?
It's compact
and low power.
All right.
And so it, I mean, you can set that up anywhere, and then you provide unfettered, uncensored access to the internets or the interwebs, as I like to say. I got another one. This one is one that I think some people might find kind of interesting. It's the Beginner's Guide to Installing Arch. So if you ever, and again, I did install Arch. I just didn't get past the command line. That's because I didn't realize. I think there's a certain sequence for installing the graphical portion of it, and I just whacked right in there and didn't read. Kind of like, never mind. But anyway, so it's a very step-by-step process to get a KDE desktop on Arch. So I'm going to include that. And again, this was from courtesy of Softpedia that posted this past week. I looked through it, and, again, Arch is a great distro. It's just a lot of control that is given to the user as far as how he or she wants to customize it. And this will get you there. All right. There was another, speaking of power users and that type of thing, another link I have. This is from TechRadar Computing. It's the best Linux distros for power users. What it did is it went and it took some significant functional categories and then ranked five. And here's a good question for you guys. It'll keep you awake over there.
All
right. Now, as far as distros for power users, I want you guys to tell me what five distros were included in this power user group. Mm. Okay.
Gentoo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Arch.
Yes. Yeah.
Slackware?
Yes.
Red Hat?
No.
No?
We're talking free distros.
Debian?
Yes. One more.
Fedora?
Yes,
Fedora.
You got them all.
Yeah.
You got them all, Matt. if we were having a game today, you would have won something.
It should have been the game. It should have been the game.
Oh, that was great. That was excellent. That was excellent. And,
I probably didn't get them in the right order, but...
No. Well, I don't think... It wasn't the order.
Oh, they didn't order them?
Yeah, they didn't really order them. What they did is they just took functional categories and then they ranked... well, for example, let's take a look at the first one, which is installation. How easy is it to install? Which is kind of ironic because this is for power users, so ease of install may not, it's kind of...
Debian's gotten a lot easier since they put that graphical installer in.
Well, everybody ranked either 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5. 5 out of 5 were Fedora, Debian, and Arch, and then Gentoo and Slackware were 4 out of 5. Again, it's either ncurses or a graphical. The default packages, they ranked everybody on that. Slackware, Fedora, and Debian. Slackware was only 4 out of 5, but ranking 1 out of 5 were, as you might expect, Arch and Gentoo, and that's only because the
they
user...
They real basic.
Bare bones.
You've got to build them up.
Yep, and it's the user's...
responsibility to put what they want.
Put what they want on there, exactly. And adaptability was one, and... let's see here.
I'm surprised Linux from Scratch wasn't on there. Or is that for like the Uber power?
Yeah, that's above and beyond. That's for. I always bust my boss's chops about how, because he runs Gentoo. Mm-hmm. I bust his chops about how Gentoo's for guys with too much time on their hands. But really, Linux from Scratch is for guys with too much time.
And that's why
I
never got
past. That's for the real propeller heads, let me tell you.
and I had made that grand announcement. I was going to go through that book and install it, and I have not done it anymore.
Yeah.
I am just so busy.
It's
working
not
full-time,
happen.
Doing all the other stuff. Well, you know how
not
it is.
Not even when you retire, Mary. It's not going to happen.
All right. And then the release schedule was the next test that they compared, and then finally documentation. And everybody scored either 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5 out of documentation. And that, no surprise, Arch is 5 out of 5 because the Arch Wiki, there are times when I'm searching for something and sure enough, even though I don't run Arch, the Arch Wiki comes up and I have looked at it. And I think the Gentoo Wiki is another excellent source.
You know who's got great documentation?
Who?
OpenBSD.
Mm-hmm.
Because if their documentation is not 100% up to snuff, it's considered a bug.
All right.
Really?
And they have to fix it, yeah.
We'll be talking about that next week, I bet.
Yes, we will.
Sunday morning BSD review. That's a, and then the last one is called Package Management. And, all right, and of those five distros, everybody but one got either a 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5. One of those distros, of power user distros, got a 2 out of 5.
Of what? Now, what is it?
It's called
the
Package Management.
And that was Slackware.
Yeah.
You are right.
And the only reason they got that is because don't do it by default. You have to choose to use Package Management.
Yep. That's right. And so, yeah, so they had that. And then the last test was the fun quotient. And everybody kind of scored, nobody scored horribly there, but Arch and Gentoo coincidentally scored 5 out of 5 in fun, and that's probably fun as far as you really get to roll up your sleeves and do a lot.
Slackware, because Slackware, I think, installs Calce by default.
4 out of 5 for Slackware, and then Fedora and Debian were 3 out of 5. So it's probably because they're a little more structured.
Calce? You don't know what Calce is?
No. Hey, that's our, that's our tool tip.
What?
Calce. Calce.
Calce is not our tooltip. Uptime's our tooltip.
Oh, okay.
Calce
right.
is,
it's
you
a
know
funny,
what Fortune is, right?
It's the same kind of game kind of thing. You just
Fortune, it uses the Fortune database, but it draws a little ASCII 2 cow with a word bubble that it says what the Fortune is.
Yeah. So.
And that's Calce?
Calce, yeah.
Calce.
App get install Calce.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so they would go on, and it was kind of an interesting article. And so that was that one. Let's see, I talked about Raspberry Pi. I talked about, I did talk about the beginner's guide that.
You know what OpenBSD does?
No.
In their, like, SSH...
Well, hard to say. They do a lot of things.
Their SSH client is by default insults you if you mess up your password.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You idiot.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it tells you in a corporate environment, you'll probably want to turn this off.
No, that's pretty funny. Because you're expected to use keys, right?
No, not necessarily, but if you mess up your password, it says, why can't you remember your simple password?
Yeah, that's pretty good. The other thing I'm going to have a link to is it's actually a Linux screenshot directory. Now, you might be thinking, well, why, what's so big about that? Well, what's interesting about this one is that the screenshots go back to 2003. So for some of you, if you want to check out how your distro looked 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, you can go here. And they've got, I mean, it's just a really lengthy page of, I'd say, probably maybe 1,000 entries here.
2003, some of the distros were running now. Most of the distros, wait a minute. What are you running, Mary? Ubuntu?
Yeah.
All of the distros that we are running were not around in 2003.
Right. But Mandrake Linux was, and you can take a look and see how it works. Mandrake Linux and Simply Mepis.
Can you put a link in the chat?
In the show notes?
In the chat.
Oh, yeah. I will do that. You betcha. Thanks for reminding me. So anyway, but I thought that was kind of fun. It's a trip down memory lane for anybody who's been running, you know, Linux for a period of time. So...
When was Ubuntu released?
2004.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, and then my KDE corner, I just got a couple little items. I have the Octopi. I talked about that. That right. was released. And actually, I had that on my list even before I decided to take a look at Chakra in further detail. So that'll be available. And then there was Kden Live, the KDE video editing program. They're doing some spring cleaning. I think, in anticipation of another release. And they'll also will be improving the integration of the MLT framework, which everybody benefits from when they use Kden Live, at least if you use it. MLT is, I think, Media Lovin' Toolkit, which I always get a kick out of when I come across that. So... anyway, but that's what I've got this week. I think we're anticipating, release of the next release of KDE 4.10. What would it be? 4, I think, coming up.
All I know is we get to go drink.
Yeah, that's right. We're gonna have a KDE release party for that.
Yeah.
So.
What's the date of that again?
Sometime this summer. I'll check it out and I'll report it next week. Because a PCBSD runs KDE, so it'll be appropriate to report it.
All right.
Excuse me, and that's it.
That's it?
Well, that's some of my news stories for this week, yeah. So.
All right.
I guess we're...
What do you have there, Tony?
I didn't get anything this week.
I got nothing.
I got a mixer.
I got a mixer.
I'm sitting around with the mixer.
That's right, that's my new voice.
That's all right, you were busy.
Yeah.
And I discovered that I've run out of distros for Is It Alive. We used them all. So we're not having a Is It Alive this week.
But we do have a toolbox.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Tools from the toolbox.
And our toolbox is on finding the uptime on your server. Because sometimes you just need to know how long that box has been running. So, first up, we have the command, uptime.
When you said that, I thought it was going to be something more involved, and I'm thinking, oh, I've used that, so that's why I sent that response to you.
Yeah.
So, when you issue uptime, you'll get back a single line that's going to have some fairly relevant information in it. The first number is when the command uptime was run, and then and in my show notes, I'll have an actual command I ran on a server, so you'll be able to see it. And then next we have...
Wait, you know what the options for uptime is?
Mm-mm. Options.
It's either help or version.
Yeah.
There is no other option.
That's, yeah. Because it gives you all the information right there.
Yeah.
Because then next it tells you how long the machine's been up. Like this machine had been up for 14 days, 6 hours, and 53 minutes. And there were 2 users logged into it. And then
After that, it tells you the load average for the last 1, 5, and 15 minutes. And when you look at the show notes, you'll see that the load average on the server I did was fairly light, since all of them were 0.00.
Yeah.
It was Mudlug.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't get much use.
Yeah. You and I were logged into it when I did these.
Oh, okay.
So, what I've done is I've made up some numbers so we can talk about how the load works. So, say your load for that first number was 0.48. That would mean that you were using 48% of a single core. Then 1.00 would mean that you were using 100% of a single core. And since this machine has two single core processors, 2.00 would be 100% usage. A good rule of thumb is that your machine should not use more than about 70% of its processing power on a consistent basis. That leaves you some headroom for spikes. Another rule to follow is that if your machine is consistently at 100%, you need to investigate and solve the problem now.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, there's probably some rogue service running.
Yeah. Or what can happen sometimes, like if you're running MySQL, sometimes you'll get queries just stacking up because they're like malformed. So they just sit there and they hang and they keep using resources. However, when getting the uptime, you usually want some more information. So the following command will show you the uptime along with some more information. It's called the
more
W
information?
Command.
Oh, the W command, okay.
So what the W command does is the first line is the uptime line. It's the exact same line as you get when you issue the command uptime. And then after that, you get other lines.
So here, you get other lines.
With the second line, right, gives us more information, like the users who are currently logged in, and on this one it was Tony and Matt, and on what terminal they're logged in. Tony was on PTS/0, and I was on PTS/1. The IP from which they are logged in, which I have redacted our IP addresses. Although yours was really funky looking. It wasn't like a regular IP. Like, mine was just an IP address, but yours was looked like a like an IP.
You know why?
No.
Because you were at work the day when you were
I wasn't. I was at home.
Really? Because I saw the addresses.
Really? Yeah, I was at home. I was at home.
Okay. You weren't, like, VPN'd into work and then doing it?
No, because I was on this laptop, not my work laptop.
That's strange, because you have Comcast at home, and we have Comcast.
No, I don't have Bright House.
Oh, you have Bright House? Maybe that's why. Because the really long ones is the reverse DNS.
Yes, that's what it looked like. It looked like a reverse DNS.
Yeah.
So, and then after it gives you the IP, it'll tell you what time the user logged in. Like, Tony logged in at 1636, and I logged in at 1652. And then it tells you how long they were idle for. Tony was idle for 38 minutes and 55 seconds. I was idle for 1 second, because I'm productive.
Because you were running the command. Busted.
And then after that, you have the JCPU and the PCPU. JCPU tells you the amount of time that you have used the processor since you logged in. Tony used 13 seconds. I used 27 seconds, even though he was logged in for longer. And then you have the PCPU, which tells you the amount of processing time that your last command used. His used 13 seconds, and mine used 17 seconds.
All right.
So, and it also tells you the last command they ran. For some reason, Tony's last command was bash. And mine was W.
You know why? It was because I was connected with SSHFS. So it shows an SSH connection, but I wasn't doing anything but
moving files. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so it would have thought you were idle that whole time because you didn't run any other command.
Yep.
Huh. Wow. And that's it, Matt? Any more?
Let's see. Then we have top and the more friendly HTOP, which give a lot more information and deserve their own toolbox segment.
Boy, I tell you, I'm impressed that you got so much out of that single command.
You know who's done a lot of information about top and HTOP?
Who?
Is that Linux in the Shell?
Yeah.
The podcast he's done on, I know he did it on top, And I think he did it on H-Top also.
Ever since I started using it, I've never known. Yeah, I never used... I always used Top until I started working where I work now, and they're big on H-Top. Mm-hmm. So I've started using it instead, and it's much more user-friendly. I really like it a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm running it right now because I installed it last year. it's got a more user-friendly... I think the H is human.
It's human.
Well, make it human readable. Sure. You ever do LS space dash H?
Why would I do LS space H? I do DF space H all the time.
Okay,
because DU space SH all the time.
Because the H, I think, puts it in human readable format. Does. So I think that's what H.
Do you know what the S does?
I'm scared to ask.
DUS.
No.
Gives you a summary.
Okay.
So, like, if you're trying to find in your home directory, you want to see all the files and mm-hmm. directories in your home directory
yes.
and how much space they're taking up, you would do du space hyphen sh mm-hmm. space slash home slash your username slash asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you some pretty succinct output. I use that at work fairly frequently to find who's hogging up the file space on shared servers.
Very cool.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, what's interesting here is that my memory, not my memory, but my laptop's memory, Firefox is kind of a memory hog.
It is. Yeah. More so than Chrome.
Yeah. I've noticed that. I think Firefox is kind of declining a little there.
Because I have three browsers installed and I mm-hmm. use all three.
Opera.
Yeah, you know, Opera, Firefox, and Chrome.
Firefox used to be a really big RAM hog, and I think the last version, or last couple versions back, they went through and fixed some of that.
Yeah, they've actually trimmed it down a fair amount, but it still uses a ton of resources. Mm-hmm.
It also depends on what plugins you have installed. And,
true,
oh,
that's
yeah,
true,
and tabs, because like every time I open Firefox, I think when I open it, it opens something like six tabs.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's a nice feature. If you've got a task to do that's repetitive and it requires looking at different things, to save tabs as a group is a very nice feature yes. that I used to make use of.
And that's why I use the three browsers, because I have a certain set of tabs mm-hmm. in Chrome that opens, a certain set of tabs in Firefox that opens, and then
Opera.
Yeah.
The original browser.
You know,
Opera was the original browser for tabs.
You know, yes, it was.
And yeah. That's why I'm always loyal to Opera, because although I don't have it installed right now, I think I'll be putting it on.
You know, they have a Deb repository. You could just add the Opera repository.
I think I will.
But using RPM, I can't. They don't have a repository for RPM. I have to just download the RPM and install it.
Yeah, but that's not a big deal.
You know, my favorite Internet Explorer story is I was working on somebody's computer.
Yeah.
And they're like, my computer runs slow. The internet just is slow. And I go in and I do everything but internet, and it runs great. Mm-hmm. I go to open up Internet Explorer.
And 37 toolbars open up.
No, there was one toolbar. But I go to look at the process usage and everything.
It spiked.
When it opened, it used over a gig of RAM.
Wow.
It was horrible. There were some add-ons that was using that.
Sure.
So I went through and disabled a lot of it, and it started running right, but it was...
Well, that's like when I went over to a friend's house who, actually it's my candidate friend. She had a ton of toolbars that were just going, and she said her internet was down. Well, the internet was up. The network was up. It was her Internet Explorer, so we got rid of, a ton of stuff, and it fixed it.
All right.
Keith says, being a memory hog for a browser is a feature.
Thank you, Keith.
The H stands for Hysham, who is the maker of H-Top.
Oh, okay. Keith, thank you very much. Keith. Yeah, thanks very much for that. I because it looked much more readable, I thought it meant human, I guess. It's kind of like the GIF and JIF thing. So, all right. All right, well, I guess, what are we up for now?
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
It was pretty light this week. In fact, I don't remember
holiday
anything.
Holiday week, probably. I don't know if we got anything.
Yeah, it was a holiday.
Nobody
week.
Talked to us.
Let's scroll back.
Let's see. There was some stuff from Matt and Mary.
I'm opening Opera now because that's what I use Opera for. Is my
your porn you and your my porn and my listener feedback
SMLR.
Oh lordy,
Matt account.
All so right. Well, we I guess have, we'll fill that dead space.
We have one.
Some spam?
No, that's not spam. It's in Russian, so I can't really tell what it is, but it had his picture and everything, so I don't think it's spam.
It had his picture?
Yeah.
I think that is spam.
No, no, no. It was...
It said, how are you? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. I think he just
translated it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not spam. He's just saying, like, how are you? He started following us, and he left us a message.
Oh, okay. I just see that kind of thing happen on the blogs.
Yeah, no, because it has his picture, I'm sure.
We should use a CAPTCHA. We should activate a CAPTCHA or something. Although those are humans that are doing it, so they'll just...
Google Plus is that handles that stuff. Okay. Our website, we have AskMit that goes through and does spam filtering. Yep. And the one, it says, we have another one, which may be spam. It says... what's up? Very nice website, guy.
We got a couple of those.
That is spam.
Yeah.
Okay, so. A link. All right, well, we won't burden everyone with the sad spam.
That's all the listener feedback we had this week.
Just holiday weekend.
Just the one Russian guy.
All right.
Okay, well, I guess.
Featured music of the week.
Oh. Did you get my? I think I sent something earlier this week.
I was listening. But I just deleted it.
I don't think you didn't like it. Could.
We don't have to use it. I just threw something out there because we didn't have something.
It matters not to me. It's all not acceptable. So.
Well, we can't have it. Death metal all the time, Matt.
It's pretty close. It's death metal for orchestras.
Yeah.
Zen. The Diablo Swing Orchestra.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I like the name of it.
I credited Keith with the being a memory hog for a browser, and it was really Dowdle. Keith had comments both above and below it.
Okay.
And I accidentally credited Keith with that when it was really Dowdle. So.
All right. Thanks for clarifying.
Well, it was clarified to me in the IRC. So.
All right. So didn't this start off really well, though?
I remember this now.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. No lyrics. Like that was what I sent back to you. Did you get it?
No lyrics. Well, that's all you said. You didn't say whether it was good or bad thing.
Right. It's bad. No lyrics. Oh, wait a minute, it's got lyrics?
That's why I didn't listen
to it far enough. But,
I like the opera, the crazy orchestra, just the kind of...
Oh, yeah, I'm all for it. I didn't think it had lyrics because the part I listened to was just instrumental, and I saw that it said instrumental in, like, the title or something. Information about it or something. In your search terms.
Because it has orchestra in the name of the...
No, instrumental. It says instrumental somewhere in there.
Oh, the tags?
Yeah.
Yeah. It also says jazz.
I know. I throw in odd combos of stuff just to see what comes up. I just thought this was kind of cool. So
yeah, this is better than what I thought it was. Yeah, we'll go with this. This is Ragdoll Physics.
power nurture destruction, and everything that will do must
I guess it's time to wrap it up.
It is.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 86. There's a new audio game in town.
That's right, the new mixer.
The new mixer.
Yep.
And let us know what you guys think about the
sound quality.
The sound quality.
Did it really get better
mics?
Or not?
Yeah, because we'll use it for listener feedback, too.
We spent a couple of bucks on it. So.
Yeah. So this is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
Well, I guess...
are we going on to the distros?
Yes, we are.
I vote for it. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I vote for it.
All right. And now we're going on to the top five for the week. So, back at number five, we have Fedora with 1367.
What?
All right, somebody didn't hit refresh.
I did.
I. You know what? All right, I guess we're going to have to start over. I hit refresh, and it didn't look like it came up, so I hit refresh again. And
it went back to 6 months.
It did. All right. At number five, we have Magia with 1472.
What?
That's the last 7 days.
Is what I have.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I think I'm going to have to step in here.
Okay, here we go. Now I'm ready. I forgot to click the button.
Oh, all right. Jeez.
That's what we get after we work so full of shit.
All right.
Anyway, so that's that.
Very cool.
Excuse me.
You know, there's this thing called the on-off switch that does the same thing.
I've used it several times. It's very effective.
Our new microphones, they actually have working on-off switches.
Oh, it was off. Just kidding. Just a joke. It's a Sunday morning Linux Review joke.
Yeah.
You would have been able to tell, though, Tony.
Yeah, I would have seen that nothing was coming out.
Okay, well, thanks for reminding me of that. Yeah. I won't remove the mic to cough next time. I was kind of freaking out because I had to cough for like the last 2 minutes. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Okay,
All right.
So anyway.
All right.
A tappable tune You can do a lot of foot tapping there, although yeah. it'd be probably spastic. All right. All right. Well,